Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, Nisa. It's good to have you back. Hi. Thank you for being on. I'm so excited.
Thank you for having me on again for the second time.
Yeah, it's been a while. I think it's almost been a year. No, it's been more than a year. Honestly, I don't know. I can't keep track of dates anymore, but you were one of my first guests. And so I'm excited to have you back on, especially now that I'm more comfortable. And I feel like our last one was quite the interesting interview, seeing as you were in your car, because I think you were at your friend's house and still decided to do the interview, which was a great interview, by the way. But I'm happy to have you back on. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
How's DC?
It's good. DC is good. I think the last time we had that conversation, I was just getting ready to move.
Yeah.
So it's been almost a year now. I think I moved here late October. That's the time flies.
Insane.
I know.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah, I think, yeah, you were still in the Bay Area and you were moving out there, and I was excited and nervous for you. But look at you now. You're all settled. Hopefully everything's going good with your work and life.
Yeah, work is good. Art could be better. I definitely need to produce more.
Yeah.
But
I mean, you're still working in art-related things, right? So you want to explain a little bit of what you do right now?
Yeah, so my title is Arts Education Specialist, and I work for the DC Commission on the Arts and Humanities, and I've been with them for almost a year now.
Fancy.
Basically, what we do is we provide grants for arts organizations and artists.
So that's really cool. You get to see the back end of grant writing and
yes.
As an artist, which I think will benefit you future-wise.
Inshallah. Yes.
Once you start producing, yalla.
Once I start producing, yeah.
You got to find the time for
inshallah. I know. I need to stop putting old work into things and make new work.
Yeah.
I've been submitting.
But I mean, you've been successful. Didn't you just have like something in London showing?
Yeah. My video, The Conversation, got shown in London. Was my film got accepted into the In Short Film Festival, and that I guess it's kind of like a traveling film festival. They start off in London and then it goes to Poland. So the London show, it was a sold out show. That's which awesome. Was great.
Yeah.
I don't know if specifically if that was because of me or just all the festival
of
was sold out.
Of course it was
out.
Because of you.
So, let me know. Of course it was. No. So, so mid-October it gets shown in Poland.
Nice.
That's really exciting. I was hoping to go, but it doesn't look like I'll be able to, which is okay.
Poland is kind of far.
It's kind of far.
Yeah.
Yep. And then hopefully, inshallah, there's going to be a private screening at UC Berkeley with a YSA for that. And inshallah, I'll be able to go
a Q&A. I really want to go and see. Yeah. I don't think I've actually seen it as and on display before. So.
Yeah. Well, did you see it in Oakland? You came. Or was that
no,
just Khalud?
Khalud only came. I didn't.
That was just Khalud. Yeah, that's right.
That's what I'm saying. It's going to be my first time seeing on display, so I hope that I can make the arrangements to be there if I'm in the country because I'm leaving. So we'll see. That's exciting. I'm happy for you, and I look forward to you producing more so that we can see more of your ideas. So going back to what I was talking about, I definitely remember all the times we shared in the art department and a lot of the moments of producing and talking, but I think a lot of our conversations were what, you know, kind of stuck with me over the years, and I always felt like you and I and other people that were around us, but we always loved to talk about things that weren't your the normal conversations I think have being had outside of, you know, maybe in privacy or just things that people didn't talk about because it was just not normalized or was taboo or whatever it was. I think you and I have probably discussed everything that there is in the book. And one of them being sexual assault. And so kind of what inspired this concept obviously is what the political climate right now in terms of like, not just the political, but even like in pop culture and in media, the Me Too movement and like the influx of conversations towards sexual harassment, sexual assault. And I just felt like it's so important that we kind of bring those conversations that are being discussed up here and kind of bringing it down to our community levels and seeing if this is the right opportunity or chance for us to start the conversation. So I thought, okay, let's start this conversation. Why not me and you start the conversation? Mm-hmm. Regardless, I mean, obviously it's just you and I on the Skype thing and whoever's listening on the podcast, but it's something. And I always feel like something, no matter how little, can have some type of impact or have like that domino mm-hmm. effect. But I was just kind of waiting for not just the right time, but also the right person I felt like I would feel comfortable talking to about this. And I feel like would be useful to the conversation and would have useful things to say, or at least, you know, in my opinion. And so obviously with everything that's happening, you know, in the States here with the Kavanaugh case and the Supreme Court seat and his sexual assault allegations. But even prior to that, obviously we had the Harvey Weinstein and the Bill Cosby and just like the mm-hmm. Me Too movement. And so I was just, when I was thinking about all of this happening, and it's, you know, so powerful to see people kind of come forth. And it's interesting even for me to learn about reasons as to why people hold back from disclosing any type of trauma that they endure, and just things that I never even knew they, you know, they experience in terms of like suppressing certain things. And when it comes back, like, you know, the idea of seeing someone taking one of the highest powers in the country would trigger something that made you feel like, okay, I need to step up and say something about this because of something he did to me. So anyways, my idea is like, okay, so this conversation is obviously out in the news, it's in front of our faces, it's on social media. How do we take advantage of this time and bring the conversations down to our community levels and kind of use this open space that's kind of like the door's been cracked and like we can open it and start having discussions about what sexual assault looks like in our communities, how we deal with it, sexual harassment, sexual you know, domestic violence and abuse, because obviously it's completely lacking, at least in our own community. And so don't you feel like that's such an important topic? And do you feel as much as I do like the gap that we have in terms of having those conversations and being more open about it?
Yes, I do think it's a very important time to talk about this. I think that our community doesn't address it. I know I'm glad you told me why you chose me to talk about this with. So when you sent me that text, I thought, why would she want to contact me of everyone, you know, like someone who studies this or someone who knows how to talk about policy and that kind of stuff, where me, I'm full of opinions, especially when it comes to our community. I kept thinking, wondering, you know, why me? And I was hesitant to say yes because of that, and because it's such a huge conversation to have. So there was a lot of doubt in my head of me thinking, well, no, I mean, I don't know if I'm the right person for her to talk to about this. But I was again thinking more on the lines of, I'm not somebody who could talk about policy. I'm not somebody who could, like, you can go to and talk about mental health or say, well, why aren't women who are sexually abused speaking up? Why are they quiet? Why are women in domestic violence homes not speaking up? So I did have a lot of doubt.
Like your own, like what value do I bring to this conversation? Is that what you were thinking?
Not what
In terms of a
value.
professional or you know
Yeah,
what I
like in
mean?
terms more of a professional of like of okay, let's take action and now what can we do besides me having like my opinions and saying, yeah, this is a problem because I know it. I know it because I'm part of that community and I'm part of and I'm a woman.
Exactly. So I can say
And
something. The reason, obviously, like I have people I can talk to that are professionals in mental health and people that, you know, I have contacts locally, not necessarily Muslims, but people who deal with receiving women or men who deal with this type of trauma, and they know how to deal with them in terms of disclosing that. But I think that sometimes having the conversation with the normal, like not, I don't want to say the normal people, but just your average everyday person, that's sometimes where the change happens. It's not so much that you, like, I think there's pieces of the puzzle that are needed, but we are needed as just people who maybe don't think that they can make a drastic change, but our voice, I think, has a lot of power, and our voice can really push for that, you know, change in the way that we as our community perceive it. Because a professional can try to address the issue on a like local level or on, you know, like on a face-to-face level, or really reach out to those people to start talking about it. But I think we're more powerful doing it than a professional, whether it's someone in the medical field or the mental health field or, you know, social services. I think that we can be more engaging, and then we can bring in those people and be the bridge kind of between the two and help them, you know, we can relay that information properly to the people that need to hear it, if that makes sense. So that's exactly why I asked you to be on this, and you know, super
Great.
excited that you're here. But going back to that conversation, like, you know, obviously we don't talk about it, and I had, so on top of just everything that's going on in the news, I got invited again to our local center, and it's an outreach center for sexual violence, sexual abuse and domestic violence, to do like a cultural competency training thing for about Muslims, more specifically Arabs, because I'm Arab, and the gentleman that was with me, he's also Arab, and he kind of just came to give the male perspective. And so they were asking, okay, well, what kind of resources do you have at the masjid? No, very good perspective. We need to
Yeah.
understand
Yeah, no, of
what the
course.
male mind is thinking in terms of these situations. I know. I feel like a lot of people hesitate to include the male voice in certain conversations that oftentimes involve women.
Yes.
But it is important that we
But
have the right people. We need them on our side regardless.
we do, but
And there's people
our
that are there.
community is a little,
You'd be surprised.
they give too much
Yeah.
of male voice, and I'm not saying that
No,
they're
for sure.
anti, they're, no, the male voice is very present with us or against us. It's very present, but there's not a lot of room for a woman to come and speak up.
Yeah.
So it's
No,
always like, well,
definitely.
let's have this man who's on our side to come and speak up.
Yeah, no. And it, honestly, in this instance, it was really more so like I was the one speaking, and he was there just to address anything that a gap that I couldn't maybe fill in terms of like the male part of it, because I'm not in those conversations with men. I don't know how they view it. I don't know how what kind of approaches or resources they think seem to be fit, because like you said, their voice is the most dominant in our community. So we need to know what their mindset is to see if they're even thinking about, they could be thinking about providing some type of resource that's completely inadequate to the need, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he was there, and then one of the ladies asked us, what's your protocol? What's your process if a woman comes to you and says, I was sexually, you know, assaulted, I was raped, my husband, you know, is abusing me. And we looked at each other, and there's, you know, we just looked at each other, and we're like, there is no protocol. There's nothing that honestly we would do. And we kind of always dealt with it on such a like small, like hush hush level, these type of situations, which is unfortunate because I don't think it ever yields the best results for the person being abused, for the victim. And so that in itself like sparked that in my mind, like, oh my God, you know, maybe I can talk to someone about it on the podcast and start that conversation.
This is a really interesting conversation just because it makes me ask myself so many questions.
Yeah, like what?
Like if you're here in the United States and you're sexually assaulted, raped, beat, then there are laws. You should go to the police, and then that's how it can go. So we don't have a separate policy. I get that, yes, because we're families of immigrants and immigrants, that there's, you know, stuff that that they don't know, that people who just came to this country that might not feel comfortable doing or not knowing, but we all have that available to us.
Right.
So I think it's more of like, well, what are we doing as a community to inform women who are in those situations? Like, whose responsibility is that?
Yeah.
I don't know. Is that more in the family? Is that the Meskid? Where does that go? If a woman were to go to the Meskid and like speak to the imam and say, my husband it beats me every day and cheats on me and rapes me, then what would the imam do?
I don't think they don't go for the, you know, going to law enforcement and going to the different like government type resources.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, the way that our culture stands in terms of keeping everything very private and quiet and trying to fix things behind closed doors. And that's one of the things why we do the trainings, is because there's this like empty space and lack of awareness between those agencies and our community. So I feel like one part is like, we have to educate them on our community. They have to know how to address men and women in our community, because they have to understand how our culture is, and they have to understand that immigrants, I think, and this is across the board, immigrants who come here and are dependent mm-hmm. on someone are less likely to disclose trauma, because they're fearful of losing their status. They're fearful of not being able to be independent. There's a lot of things. Because I even think that the abusers, like, you know, they know this type of information. If someone is inclined to want to abuse someone and they know that that person's not going to speak up, you know, that's an opportunity for them. They see that vulnerability. But also a part of it is, we should have something in our masajid that support women and make it as normal. Because mm-hmm. I think regardless, you're Muslim, Arab, whatever you are, I think to come forth and say that you've went through something is hard. But we have, I think, no safety nets and no comfortability in terms of anyone coming out and saying.
I think that's what I'm getting to, is like first questioning, well, okay, why don't we feel that we have the same rights as everyone else in this country, right? So it's like, why can't we? I mean, of course, there are women here in the U.S. who don't report either. That's obvious and has been very clear the last few months, is that women don't report this.
Yeah.
So I guess what I would be concerned with, again, like, because I have to now just think, all right, well, our community isn't doing anything. They're not talking about what's going on still, even with everything in the news. They're still not talking about it. Like, I don't know if an imam has, I feel like as a religious leader, right, they should like bring that up. That's something that's relevant. It's something that's happening today, to even like announce that before prayer and say, hey, this is happening. This is a concern. Here are some resources.
Right.
Have like things posted at the Meskid about that.
And have it in different
languages. Have a helpline and in different languages.
So
that would be, and the Meskid is a place that's welcomed. You know, you're welcome to go as a woman and a man. Because
mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, you know, as strict as our culture can be sometimes, women are not allowed to go to certain places. They have to go with a family unit, and the Meskid is usually that place, like everyone can go, hopefully.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah.
Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yeah. No. I definitely agree. And I think it's just... The thing is all of this needs to be facilitated by who, I don't know. And sometimes I think, is it me? Is it you?
Is it us?
Like, I don't
know. Is it the first generation, you know, who grew up here, who understand both cultures? I think it's partly our responsibility.
I would have to agree. I think that it's our responsibility because we've been, in a way, blessed with knowledge and independence a little, just like enough of what we need to actually make a change. I do believe that. And it's something that I think about a lot because it's like, am I taking advantage of what God has blessed me with and giving back to my community or giving back to people that do need the help? I don't necessarily worry about our generation as much. I mean, obviously, I think depending on how your current, like the current state of your family's traditions and how they view things is going to affect whether or not you're vocal. But I think most of us now, if faced in a very horrible situation, would figure out a way out. You know, you speak the language, you have a car, you have accessibility to people, to different organizations. Not that it would be easy, but it's still better than to some women who come here and don't have a car and like literally can't escape their home, which is supposed to be their safe, you know, their safest place. And maybe their home is the least safest place that they could be.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just felt like, you know, this conversation needs to be discussed or this conversation needs to be listened to and maybe talked about more and more and more and more and more and more just to like get it going. Like it's weird. We don't talk about it. And like you said, we have every right as everyone else to these resources that are provided to us through our tax dollars and like, you know, through nonprofit organizations. And yet,
yeah. And it's very unlikely that a Middle Eastern person here will be, cause there are a lot of immigrants who are afraid to go to the police because they're undocumented.
Exactly.
But that's very unlikely for us because it's not like to get here is such you have to have some type of documentation. Like there's just no real way around that. So what keeps us from is really the culture. It's the taboo and it's being the dependency.
Yeah. Because I think women fear that they're going to lose their children. They're going to fear that they won't provide for their children alone. I mean, they're coming into a country that is very foreign to them, you know, to an extent, although, you know, the Western culture is pretty globalized, but it's still foreign to them. Their language isn't, maybe they haven't learned the language. And so how are they supposed to take care of themselves? And they probably don't know that there's resources to help them, like social welfare.
They don't.
And
that's true. I was also wondering when we talked about this a little bit the other day, and I thought about it some more, and I don't know what middle, like our country, Yemen, like what Yemen does in this situation. Like, can a woman just call the police?
Now or before? Because I think now, obviously,
there's
infrastructure now for really any type of public service. But I can tell you that when I was there, there was an orphanage and it did take in women who were either abandoned by their husbands or they were widows, and it did help take care of them and their children. But in terms of, that's the thing is, like, it's, I think a woman with children, that's kind of one thing. But what about a girl who faces abuse in her household or has been raped and is struggling with that and her family's not accepting it? Where does she go?
Even forced into marriage, because that's a real thing that still happens.
Yeah, true. It's not as often. Well, the forced marriage, I can't speak to. I don't know the stats. Obviously, we know that that happens. I don't think anyone would deny what happens in our culture and traditions and like how that setup is. But I don't know what the resources are. I would imagine that for the most part, they're lacking in almost every place except maybe big cities like Sana'a and Aden. You know what? Women in Yemen are amazingly like powerful and amazingly like kind of aggressive with their work. So you'd actually find that a lot of movements and a lot of progressivism is happening within like women in Yemen, which is amazing.
I think It's amazing.
And so I would hope and I would assume that there's things like happening, but unfortunately with the way that the country is right now, I don't know how much help they're getting in terms of.
I think they've improved. And there is this like that huge breakout story of child brides that happened. That girl, and I know that because of her, they made some sort of policy. I know that I remember that happening. I can't remember exactly what it said.
The zawaj al qasirat, so like the minor, like getting married as a minor, and I think now they raised the age to, I want to say 18. I'm actually not sure, but it was
after puberty or something like that.
Which I mean, that's not
so. It was still young, but.
I don't like that law, because I feel like it's very relative, the puberty thing, because the girls can hit puberty as young as like 9, I think.
Yeah.
And so, you know, to say that, there's a lot of flexibility and I think a lot of mistreatment that could still, and oppression that could still happen. So I definitely don't like that. I think it should just be 18 and 16, like with consent of the girl or whatever. Kind of like how it is, I think, here in the States. But you're right. Like, obviously, in the Middle East, there's other things that, you know, women and maybe men are facing, too, because, I don't know, maybe if female abuse isn't discussed in our communities, I think male abuse is definitely not discussed in our communities. I'm sure it's happening. Yeah.
Which is a real thing, especially among children and teenagers. That's especially when it comes to sexual assault. Like, the stories are endless with that as well.
Definitely.
That there's is a very real thing.
Yeah, but I think that's even more, almost more taboo than the girl thing, especially if it's a male predator and a male victim, then it just becomes, you know, I think a lot of it stems from shame and the family honor. And like, when you want to disclose trauma to try to address it or try to, you know, prevent it from happening to someone else or to seek justice, you really are putting yourself out there. And I think that's the biggest thing, is no one, or rarely do people want to put themselves out there. And if I experience trauma and I want to disclose that information for justice or for whatever reason, like, my family may be the reason why I don't, because they convince me otherwise because of, again, the shame and, you know, the fact of everyone knowing your business.
There's our cult, I hate saying this, but like, our community is very sexist in that way, where, you know, a woman, if anything were to happen to her, then that's it. There's no leniency. There's no leeway. There's no, okay, you made a mistake, or the mistake has been done, or something has happened.
Or you're a victim, you know.
Or you're a victim. It's not even.
It's
very frustrating. Yes, it's very frustrating, because it becomes, you know, it's victim blaming. So it's on you and your shoulders to not only protect yourself, but you're in charge of protecting your whole family's reputation. So it's a lot of like pressure on you to sit there as a woman, to have to carry your whole family's name. And if one thing happens to you, whether you want it or not, whether you invited it or not, whatever happens to you, then it's like, well, that's that. And I think that's why women are so quiet. They don't speak up. And we learn that at a very young age. We learn that very quick, that, oh no, because, you know, I played jump rope that one time and got caught. Now I'm in trouble because I was playing with a boy. And, you know, you'd learn that at a very young age, when your family tells you, like, you know, don't do this, don't do that. And you have that in your head, like, oh, I'm not supposed to do this because it's aib, it's shameful. Yeah. And now I've just, like, risked my whole family's reputation because I did this.
So maybe it does start at such a young age, and it might not even be a conversation of, like, trauma or any type of abuse, but it could be just interactions with the opposite sex or doing things that aren't for a girl.
We're also taught that
the backlash, you know, is on us, and we get older, and if playing with a boy in the playground is going to get me in trouble, what's going to happen if they find out that someone, you know, assaulted me, you know, sexually?
We're also taught at a very young age that men and boys can behave certain ways and we cannot. Yeah. And if we go and play with this kid, then something can happen, and that's just the way they behave. So we have to be cautious. It's not really them that have to be cautious. It's we have to be protective of ourselves at all times, because God knows what they might do. And if they do it, that's just because that's just the way that boys behave. That's just the way that men behave.
There's always an excuse for them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's,
it's like, how many times that could, you know, I can't even say how many times something was too tight on me and it attracted someone else's attention. But because of, you know, it was my fault, I got yelled at and I got, you know, in trouble with my family because of that. And it wasn't, that man didn't have any accountability, moved on with his day, you know, said what he said, and that was that. But I got
the burden and the
beating for it.
Well, you know, that's like so, the oldest tale told, really, when it comes to this stuff. I mean, not just even within specific cultures, but, you know, something happens and it's always, it's not, you know, how did this happen? Why? It's more like, what did you do to entice this? And, you know, what could you have done to prevent it? And it's like, you know, and, you know, we talked about this the other day. You could be in full hijab. You could be your face covered. You could be as, you know, you could be as modest as possible, as quiet, doing your own thing. And you can still face sexual harassment. And I think that most women I know can speak to that, including myself, that you could be completely covered in Yemen or here in the States, and someone could still, you know, sexually harass you either verbally or physically. And at that point, it's like, okay, so that whole excuse of like, oh, well, you were wearing something that was enticing them and stuff, it doesn't roll. Because if a man is sick in his head, or if a man is just wanting to do whatever the hell he wants because he thinks that
and
he has
woman,
the right to,
man or woman, yeah,
exactly, man or woman, they're gonna do it. You know,
yeah.
I don't think they care at that point. I do think that they look for, you know, vulnerability, and they look for maybe targets, and know that as Muslim women, maybe, or like men too, because men aren't going to disclose that they were sexually assaulted, because most people think like, really, like a woman's going to come on to you and you're going to refuse her and she's going to force herself on you. There's a lot of people who don't believe that that's, you know, an actual thing. And again, it's unfortunate, because even all these mentalities are silencing people and really setting us back in terms of like moving forward with these conversations and, you know, helping people really find peace in traumas that they've went through, you know?
Yeah, it's really sad. It's really unfortunate. And I do think that we're taught this as kids. We're taught this at a very young age.
Yeah. It's funny, because when you said that, it was something I hadn't thought about, and it just kind of registered, I guess, that it started at a young age, and it started with something as simple and as innocent as playing with a boy in the playground, or, you know, talking about a boy in your classroom and like something you did, like, you know, the innocence of that. And it's like they fear it, you know, and I get it, like they're immigrants, they don't know, I'm speaking about here in the United States, they don't know, and so they're fearful, and they don't, because, you know, in Yemen, a lot of schools are segregated, they're not co-ed, so they don't know what to do with this, and they're fearful of just, like, us somehow letting loose. But you get traumatized by that stuff, because you're so fearful of, like, if they catch me playing with a boy, like, I'm gonna get in trouble. So imagine if, like, in the future, a boy is, you know, harassing me or making me feel uncomfortable, then I can't talk about that, because they're just going to assume that I was, like, super comfortable around guys, and, like, I was inviting guys to be around me. And honestly, those thoughts go through your head. And so it just kind of, it's something that kind of grows with you, and it's something that you take, you know, from your childhood. And that's interesting. I think that's a key part of the conversation, is where does it start? And it really does start at a young age, and, like, what we teach young girls about not just, you know, who they interact with, but self-esteem too. Like, you know, you carry yourself confidently, and you know your worth, and you know what you're doing is not wrong, then no one can judge you for that. And even as parents, I think, I wish, you know, I don't think that there's much hope for the older generation, but I wish that was the mentality that they had. It's like, it doesn't matter if you're with a guy or with a girl or whatever, but if you know your morals and you know yourself and you're confident, like, there's, you know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. And that way, when they do get older and they do have someone harassing them or someone doing something, they can talk about it because, you know, khalas, they have that confidence. They feel entitled to that right to speak up, you know? I don't know. Such an interesting topic.
It is. It's also very sad. It makes me really sad thinking about it because I know that there are you know, women out there who are being abused and they just don't know who to talk to or who to go to and are really afraid of this like country and what it might take away their husbands or, you know, and them not knowing, well, okay, how am I going to support myself and what's out there for me? And even resources here, it's great. We have resources, but they're not that much.
They're not that much, and they're not accessible to us, not necessarily us, but like it's not accessible to immigrants. It's not accessible to people who are ESL, English as a second language, or even, you know, don't speak English, non-English speaking. So I don't know. There's definitely a lot of work that needs to be put out there, but I really do think
our community, it needs to come from the masjid. It needs to come from the mosques and the churches. Like there's, you know, Arab who are not Muslim and, you know, but that's like where we go. That's where both sexes go.
That's where the bully pulpit is.
Yeah, it's, you know, and it needs to come from an imam that can talk about it and say, hey, this is a real issue that we face.
And we need to talk about it. How the religion discusses how to address it, because maybe we don't even have the knowledge of how that's supposed to happen. But even in terms of, like, you know, I think Islam highlights so much the idea of helping those who are oppressed, helping minorities, helping those basically who need help. And, like, you know, obviously someone who's been through some trauma needs help. And what are we doing as Muslims?
And this will definitely help the the conversation about how Islam believes in abusing women.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I know it says, like, your husband can beat you.
Yeah, the lack
of... No, it's not okay to beat her.
And the lack of that conversation, it maybe perpetuates that mentality that people have, that stereotype.
And it also women who are not educated in the Middle East and who do not, you know... And their husbands use that, like, well, in the Quran, it says that I can beat you. And, you know, and so they think, well.
That's taken out of context.
It is. But it happens.
Oh.
Yeah.
Don't even get me started on that. There's so many things that men, let's just say people, because people are going to start calling me sexist, but men. And also, you know, like people who are very racist or people that are very ignorant towards Islam, they use.
I feel like you can't call a woman sexist. That's not allowed.
Right? No. I've thought about that.
You can't. Really, it's like calling a person of color racist. Like, I don't know.
Well, let's...
Different, but...
This is like a whole nother topic. And my sister Hannah and I actually talked about like doing a research study on it because she's a sociology major. And I was a political science major. So we were talking about the ism. So racism, you know, the definition in itself says that it's about... you know, people who have been oppressed, right? And so, you know, there's that conversation. It's like, can you be racist towards white people? And so I started thinking about the ism, and I was like, okay, well, can you be sexist against a woman? Because technically, sexism stemmed from women being oppressed by men. Mm-hmm. So in what time in history have men been oppressed by women? And then there's the idea of ageism and so on and so forth. And so I don't know. That's just a whole other conversation, and we're just not going to get into that. But... Sorry, I have just a lot of stuff where my mind goes and like a lot of interesting thoughts. So obviously this conversation in itself is not going to be the solution to this, and I'm not looking for necessarily a solution. I think I just want to spark a conversation. I'd love to hear from anyone listening to this. Like, you can send me a message via any form of messaging on social media or email. To know what people think are the steps or, you know, the different points that need to be addressed in terms of starting that conversation that's being discussed in the media and in politics and, like, women being comfortable coming out and speaking about... Because even outside of, like, the actual cases we know of, there's women that are, like, this movement where they're just like normal women are going online on Facebook and on Instagram and talking about, when I was this age, this happened to me. Like, I was raped. Mm-hmm. I was this. And so how do we bring that to our level where we can normalize it? Like, it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be like overnight.
It would be great if we could, do something like that, even if it was, you know, respond anonymously and say something that happened to you, because I have so many stories that I could share and say, yeah,
so this did happen.
That happened.
I'm going to put you a little bit on the spot. Why are you not
comfortable? None of your business. No, I'm kidding.
Damn, shut down. No, but honestly, and I can answer this question for myself too. Why don't you feel comfortable talking about them? I'm assuming you don't, because you're saying the anonymous thing, and you said you have things you would share if it was anonymous. And I'm not saying you should feel comfortable. I think everyone is at their own pace. If they want to disclose, if they don't want to disclose. But for what reasons would you not disclose?
Again, even me being almost 40 years old, still feeling that pressure that family brings upon you. That's just like, okay, if people know this or that, then, you know, oh, well, that's probably why she has never been married. Or, oh, that's like in the community, they'll start saying things. And it's not true. Nothing. This is a weird thing to talk about, because I don't even want to say what I was about to say. It's not even, and because I'm not trying to make it sound like anything that's ever happened to me was so small that, oh, well, it was so small, it's not damaging to my family's reputation. Cause it's not okay. And everything that has happened is not okay. I would share, you know, when I was in Yemen and I was 10, 11 years old, fully covered from head to toe, face and everything. And I remember I was walking home from the market and there was a man, and he lifted up his thobe and revealed his penis and started to like come towards me really fast and chased me till I was maybe 3 houses down from my house and then stopped. Fully covered, 10, 11 years old, that happened to me. So real early in life, I learned, oh, my mom and dad were right. Stay away from men, because these things can happen to you. Oh, this is what they were telling me to be careful about. Oh, you know, and did I go home and tell my mom and dad? No, because I knew that if I told them, I would never be allowed to go to the market alone again, or period.
And
take away from my liberties. So, yeah. And I think that's probably why a lot of women don't, in our community, don't even report little things that, you know, oh, this person said something sexual about the way I'm dressed, because they're probably afraid that their parents are going to say like, oh, well, maybe you should be homeschooled instead of going to a regular public school.
They fear that their privileges, quote unquote privileges, which, you know, some of them are their human rights, would be taken away from them, or that they've progressed somehow in education or in career, and they feel like that could be taken away from them just because of an instance of, yeah, someone even just talking about the way that they were dressing provocative, and that instant fear within those parents, which is really unfortunate. And so, I think bringing up that conversation, I think for me, and I feel comfortable talking about it, but maybe because personally I've not endured really anything that I would say is too traumatizing. But I mean, I've had an instance in Yemen where I was, again, fully clothed. I was in a souk, like a shopping area, and I had my back towards kind of the walkway where people are walking back and forth, and I was looking at something at a stand, and like a man passes by and like grabs my ass, and I was 14, 15, and I remember like just freezing and not knowing what to do, because when it happened, I thought maybe someone bumped into me, although like a bump and a hand are completely two different feelings. And I turn and I look at him, and as he's walking away, like he's looking at me, and I just remember feeling so disgusting. I kid you not, like the whole time I was there, I could never go to that souk again. And just the idea of someone being behind me, like I immediately just freeze and tense up, because I just assumed that they would touch me. But my fear, I think, or the way that I look at it as a possibility for women not speaking, is also the idea of being silenced, or the idea of negating them or saying that they're lying. And I think sometimes people can say, like, a man could just say, like, I didn't touch her, you know, I didn't do this. Or if a man is, you know, aggressive towards a woman, he might say she wanted it, or lie and say she led him on. And, you know, they're scared of that coming out and saying, you know, well, was she leading him on? And then that conversation starts, and you know how that goes. It's gonna grow into something. So mm-hmm. That fear too of someone else taking
or not
the conversation,
believed.
Yeah, not being not believed in the conversation, being taken away from you. That like that the power to that, you know, narrative is taken away from you because someone could immediately just turn it on and say, actually, no, she was asking for it, or you know, she wanted it, she spoke to me about it, or whatever it was, or she came towards me, and I just did this. And you know what's weird, Anissa, is like men have the balls to say that. That to me is surprising, because when they have the balls to say, yeah, I touched her, but she came to me, it's like, why do they feel so comfortable saying that they did touch her? Because they know that if the blame was on she came to me, then that's going to overpower the story and not the fact that he touched her. Then it's like, oh, يعني أنت قربتي, or أنت يعني رحتي لعنده, or whatever. Like, you went to him. Okay, then the focus is on her, and he's like free to go. She's left defending herself, and she's probably like, I shouldn't have said anything in the first place. Anyways, I'm getting a little frustrated, but...
Me too.
I'm sorry. But it's okay. We need to have these conversations, I think.
We do.
So I just, if anyone has any type of ideas or just any commentary, any points on what they think is important to add into this conversation, send us a message or send me a message. And maybe, like, we'll come back on again and talk about these things. Or maybe we can start an initiative together. I don't know. But we need us Muslim women, Muslim men, Muslim people to help our own Muslim communities when it comes to these types of things. So we'll see. Hopefully this – if it doesn't benefit anyone, it benefits us.
And it can start, you know. It can start with just sharing stories and knowing that you're not alone in these experiences. That can help.
So we'll see. Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Anissa, for joining me.
You're welcome.
And you know, it was kind of a little bit of a heavy conversation, but I appreciate you sticking through it and sharing some of your stories and some of your thoughts. Really happy to have you back on, and inshallah, I'll get to have you back on again maybe next year. We'll do like an annual
inshallah
thing. Thank you for listening in, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. Don't forget to like and follow this Muslim Girl podcast on all social media platforms, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Also, check out the blog thismuslimgirl.com for all content information from this and all previous episodes.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.